This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit us on the web at sevillepodcast.com for lectures, radio shows, and more. What is sustainable forestry, and how does it affect our region environmentally and economically? Answers to those questions were on hand at a June 17, 2008 lecture organized by the James River Green Building Council, Charlottesville Division. The speakers are introduced by John Bruneau of Timber Truss Housing Systems.
First off, it's going to be Dr. John Massell. He's going to describe the FSC program and sustainable forestry practices. He will also discuss how FSC certification can help consumers realize their sustainability goals. Following him will be Dr. Brian Bond. Dr. Bond will discuss the market for FSC certified products. And these topics are going to include supply limitations to the product of certified lumber and consumer perception of the finished product. And then to finish it off is going to be Mr. Charlie Becker. He's going to talk about Jonathan's experience of over 20 years in the forestry industry and discuss how forest certification programs such as the FSC affect Virginia landowners. So without further ado, let me introduce Dr. John Munsell. Dr. Munsell is an assistant professor and forest extension specialist at Virginia Tech. His areas of interest are forestry extension, private forest stewardship, collaborative conservation, integrated natural resource problem solving, and heritage-based extension. He's got a BA from Tulane, a master's from SUNY College of Environmental Science, and a PhD from SUNY as well. So let's give a hand for Dr. Munsell.
Hey, thanks, John, and thanks to all of you for the opportunity to speak about some what I consider very important issues, namely sustainable forestry, forest certification standards, and to the extent that I can, green building. Again, my name is John Munsell, and I'm relatively new to Virginia. I arrived from New York last summer, where I was a graduate student at the SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry, as mentioned. And from the time that I started to the time that I finished, which I'm embarrassed to say actually was almost 7 years, forest certification went from an issue that was addressed here and there fairly infrequently to something that we spoke about on a regular basis. It is a consistent and hot topic, and I think that this symposium is timely, and I'm glad to be a part of it. My presentation is broken into two sections. First, I'm going to talk about sustainable forestry, primarily from a conceptual standpoint. I'll touch on some of the associated principles, practices, and issues, and I'll also talk about some of the key mechanisms that can be put into place to facilitate sustainable forestry, of which certification is just one. And then I'll transition into a more specific discussion on the Forest Stewardship Council, or FSC as it's known, talk about its history, its structure, and its objectives, and then I'll touch on leadership in energy and environmental design, or LEED, and its role in integrating FSC wood into development and maintenance. So what is sustainable forestry? It's a million-dollar question. There are many definitions in place, and over the years there have been numerous initiatives and processes and other efforts to define sustainable forestry, to create frameworks to help us better understand what sustainable forestry means and what it might look like. But in many cases today, it remains in the eye of the beholder. As some of you might be aware, at Virginia Tech, we have a slight problem with defining exactly what a hokey is. Students and faculty and alumni are encouraged to respond with "I am" to the question, "What is a hokey?" And that doesn't really do anything to help clear up what that is exactly. And in many cases, sustainable forestry suffers from the same fate. There are numerous individual perspectives and approaches to sustainable forestry. There are institutional visions for sustainable forestry that are diverse. But one concept that I think cuts across those perspectives and those definitions that are diverse is an interest in balancing the environmental, social, and economic factors associated with forest management. And keeping those things in mind and managing our forests in a way that meets our generation's needs without sacrificing or jeopardizing the forest's capacity to meet the needs of future generations. Another key aspect of sustainable forestry is the harvest. Okay, it is forestry, after all, and sustainable forestry does not preclude the cut. What it does is it requires that harvesting operations occur in a way that take into consideration those three primary objectives: the environmental, the social, and the economic. Of course, the question surfaces again, what are the types of operations that can adequately achieve those ends? And there are numerous perspectives. We can take, for instance, the cliche example of the clear cut. On one hand, some people would argue that that's not sustainable forestry. On the other, there would be those that say that it is. There would also be those that say, well, a clear cut can occur to a certain acreage threshold, but beyond that, it's not permissible. And then there would be those that say, well, we can have a clear cut as large as we want it. As long as regeneration occurs, then in fact, sustainable forestry has happened. Regardless, it's important to keep in mind that harvesting is an important component because it removes the materials that we need to produce the products that society depends mightily upon. Historically, however, we have not done a good job in balancing the removal of those materials to produce the valuable products with the valuable services that our forests provide. And what do I mean by those services? Water quality, wildlife habitat, erosion control, pollution abatement, aesthetics, recreation, heritage. All of these different aspects, these valuable services that our forests provide, historically, there's been an imbalance, particularly on private forest land, which constitutes the largest form of forest ownership east of the Mississippi. Some 83% of Virginia's forests are privately owned. And what hangs in the balance is forest sustainability. So it was with this imbalance in mind that 20 to 30 years ago or so, folks came together to begin discussing how sustainable forestry might look and how it could serve as a vehicle for achieving a balance between the services that forests provide and the goods that we depend heavily upon. Now, this issue is nothing new. As I mentioned, 20 to 30 years people have been tackling it. However, it's growing increasingly important here in the Southeast. Virginia and its neighbors constitute the wood basket of the world. There is no doubt. Domestically speaking, on average, 64% of the hardwood volume harvested in this country is derived from forests in the Southeast, 62% for softwood volume. By 2030, the Southeast is expected to exceed the West in lumber production, and all told, 15 to 20% of the world's industrial wood for production purposes comes from the Southeast. So the idea of implementing sustainable forestry here, given these increasing pressures, is critical and important at this time. But we also need to think beyond just maintaining the forest's capacity to provide services and to offer those goods that are essential for producing those products that we rely on. But we also need to think about the economic viability and social welfare associated with sustainably managed forests. Particularly here in Virginia, where the forestry sector is an important part of the economy, an important part of social welfare, we see that $27 billion in benefits are associated with our forests on an annual basis. Landowners in the Commonwealth receive $276 million on average payout on an annual basis for the management of their forests. There's about 184,000 jobs associated with the forest products industry and sector, and there's $2.5 billion received in revenue on an annual basis. As far as services are concerned, primarily related to recreation and tourism, the Department of Forestry estimates $1.7 billion annually. So we need to think not only from an environmental standpoint, but also an economic and social standpoint. And that's what sustainable forestry attempts to do, is to synthesize those three components into a form of forest management that can adequately address all of those and balance and synthesize those critical goods and services that forests provide. So how do we do this? How do we implement sustainable forestry? How do we work to balance the environmental, social, and economic components that I have mentioned? Back to another million-dollar question. How do we facilitate sustainable forestry? Well, there are a variety of mechanisms. Sometimes they work together, sometimes they work independently. Robust and diverse markets associated with multiple materials and services, those things I've mentioned, can facilitate sustainable forestry. Education, the business that I'm in, creating awareness related to sustainable forestry, generating interest on the part of the public related to sustainable forestry, that can in turn help implement sustainable forestry on the ground. The government can pay for sustainable forestry via subsidies. They can regulate it. They can say it has to occur, and this is how it's going to occur. And then certification, which is the topic of the day, is another mechanism that's been developed to facilitate sustainable forestry on the ground. At this point, though, I'd like to make a key point that I think we should all keep in mind before we move forward, and that is that certification aims to foster sustainable forestry, but sustainable forestry is not necessarily dependent upon certification. Okay, these other mechanisms that I mentioned can and have facilitated sustainable forestry in the past, but certification is an emerging opportunity to not only facilitate sustainable forestry, but link those products to other folks, such as yourselves, that are interested in green building or other green initiatives to create a more holistic system that moves through the value-added process, but keeping in mind that sustainable forestry can occur outside of certification. Simply stated, certification really is a process of verifying that sustainable forest management is occurring on the ground. Okay, it is a voluntary system. Regardless of the standard, regardless of the regime, landowners and land managers can choose to participate. They're not forced to. Audits are key parts of certification, and that's a process where a group of experts will come together to assess what's transpiring on the ground and to make recommendations regarding certification and the achievement of standards related to those certifying bodies and their standards in particular. And then there's a chain of custody aspect as well. So when the management occurs on the ground, when those materials are removed, accounting for all those other various aspects that are critical, can we keep tabs on that material as it moves through the value-added process so that when it reaches the market, the consumers can be certain that, in fact, that is a certified sustainable wood product. One big hurdle to certification is cost. It does require quite a bit of administrative cost to initiate a certification system for a tract of forest land. 50 cents to several dollars just to assess on a per acre basis, and that's outside of developing the management plan that goes along with that and buying into the system. Then you also have the auditing costs associated with staying involved with the certification body, 5 to 20 cents per acre, and the regularity with which audits occur depends upon the certifying body. You can see that occur annually. Some require every 5 years, some every 2 to 3 years. There are several standards. Domestically speaking, the big three, Sustainable Forestry Initiative, the Forest Stewardship Council, and Tree Farm. And in keeping in line with the various definitions of sustainable forestry that I touched on earlier, they all have varying approaches and varying visions for what constitutes sustainable forest management as it relates to their standards and their willingness to certify the products that are being removed from those forests. I will draw your attention to a few international certifying bodies, the Canadian Standards Association and the Pan-European Forest Council are also involved in certification initiatives outside of the U.S. But the focus today is the Forest Stewardship Council, FSC, and it had its beginnings in 1990 when timber users, traders, and social and environmental groups came together to talk essentially about their concerns related to this imbalance that I mentioned earlier. The fact that they felt markets in many ways were just aiming at the materials and not considering necessarily the services associated with forests, and that we weren't doing a good job in finding that balance. In 1992, the Earth Summit occurred in Rio de Janeiro, you may recall, and it was on the heels of that Earth Summit that the Forest Stewardship Council was officially created in 1993. 2 years following that, the U.S. chapter was established in Washington, D.C. to oversee and facilitate FSC certification and FSC forest management here in the States. FSC uses a membership-based governance system. It has a general assembly that meets on a regular basis, and there are three chambers with equal representation. And you'll recognize what they're representing, the environmental aspects, the social aspects, and the economic aspects. And all members participating in FSC can participate in the General Assembly, and they can go to those specific chambers and voice their concerns or ideas related to those specific aspects related to sustainable forestry. And in keeping with this Equals set up this equality. The board of directors, there are 9 of them, and there are 3 that are elected from each chamber. So there's equal representation on the part of the environmental, social, and economic factors in the board of directors discussions, and the executive director is charged with working with those board of directors to facilitate and advance FSC. Presently, there are over 40 national offices worldwide. And FSC's objective is to promote environmentally responsible, socially beneficial, and economically viable management on the world's forest land. Their key trademark, really, is third-party auditing. And this is one thing that they use to market their certification system. And what that means is that, you probably know, there's a party outside of FSC that's acknowledged by FSC as having the capacity to effectively carry out an audit on the forest land, a tract of forest land that's participating in FSC, and then they make some assessments and recommendations regarding certification and bring that back to FSC. But FSC is not directly involved in auditing their properties. They contract out to third parties. And those third parties focus in, of course, on the forest management standards as defined by the Forest Stewardship Council. And what they've done to create a framework that's helpful, and not only allowing the auditors to make some assessments, but also those landowners and land managers move toward management of forest that falls in line with what the FSC requires, is this design and development of 10 principles and criteria. Okay, and these principles and criteria have, well, the principles are kind of the overarching ideas, and the criteria are the specific benchmarks that need to be reached in order for a forest to be certified FSC. And they relate to things like management planning, plantation management, and the environmental impact of any harvesting operations in a tract of forest land. The big question initially, at least having been introduced to certification several years ago, was, is there a demand for certified products among the public? And I think that we can safely say now, for the most part, there's not. Things might be changing, but over the last decade, there's been a whole host of studies that have demonstrated that when folks go to Home Depot, they don't really discern between an FSC 2x4 or a non-certified 2x4. They're not willing to pay a premium for those products. But in the last few years, the Green Building Initiative has come online and has provided an emerging opportunity for certified forest products. The LEED rating systems associated with the U.S. Green Building Council is a good example, but also Green Globes, Earthcraft, House Program, and Energy Star, all of which are recognized by the state of Virginia as green building programs. But they have been able to, at this point in time, create a new opportunity for these certified products, and I'm not certain exactly where that's going to go in the future, but hopeful that it will provide an opportunity for landowners and land managers to begin to realize a premium associated with their efforts to certify sustainable their forests and the management therein. As far as the leadership in energy and environmental design is concerned, associated with FSC, and there is a link presently where wood coming from the FSC program is required to be used within this particular process. There are 3 components to it. There's the considerations related to design, construction, and operation. And design and construction hone in specifically on homes and neighborhood development, commercial interiors, core and shell, new construction, schools, healthcare, and retail. With operations following, and that's primarily related to maintaining existing buildings and shoring up any problems that might be in place, any maintenance that needs to occur. And LEED does have its own third-party certification program as well, so it parallels FSC nicely along those lines, and it is the nationally accepted benchmark for high-performance green building in the United States. Really wants to update.
Sorry about that. Restart it later.
And LEED takes a whole building approach to sustainability, and this is where I'm going to make the link back to sustainable forestry and those trees on the ground out in somebody's tract of forest land that they're harvesting. Really, number 4, if you look, the material selection is key, and the wood products that are used in this whole building approach associated with LEED looking at those certified products specifically coming out of the FSC program is what the is LEED intends to do, and that's the link that exists presently. They're also interested in sustainable site development, water savings, energy efficiency, and indoor environmental quality as well. So in conclusion, sustainable forestry, and I was speaking with John earlier, perhaps much like green building, there's still some issues related to specific definitions or frameworks and those things being agreed upon across multiple parties. We struggle with that and have for years now, defining what exactly sustainable forestry means in a consistent fashion. One thing that is clear, though, is that sustainable forestry aims to balance the environmental, social, and economic factors associated with forest management. And there are many certification standards out there, but associated with LEED, FSC is the prime player presently, and Forest Stewardship Council uses that third-party auditing as its primary marketing tool, and also demonstrating that it's committed to addressing those multiple aspects associated with sustainable forestry and ensuring that there's no conflicts of interest along those lines. And then the Green Building Council with LEED and tying in, I think, represents a more holistic approach to programs and processes that relate to harvesting the materials out of the forest, balancing the services along with the removal of those materials, and then taking those materials on to produce the products that we need to provide housing and other facilities that society values. I guess we're taking questions at the end, but that concludes my portion.
Dr. Brian Bond serves as the extension specialist in wood products at Virginia Tech, where he's currently the extension and research program focusing on improving efficiencies in sawmills and lumber drying operations in Virginia. He teaches the wood drying portion of wood drying wood durability. Dr. Bond currently has programs focused on comparing efficiencies of various lumber stacking methods in drying operations and in reducing the target size of lumber through reducing sawing variations. He has a BS from Clemson, a master's from Virginia Tech, and also a PhD from Virginia Tech, where he is now.
One could argue that the machine is trying to sustain itself by uploading new software and virus protection. And one could also argue that it's not sustaining itself by committing suicide by adding things that you don't actually need or want. And it's kind of an interesting parallel to sustainability that John talked about. You know, what exactly is sustainable forestry? And it's in the eyes of the beholder many times. You know, that's the classic example of a computer. Is it trying to sustain itself or drive us crazy? And I'll go ahead and kind of start off. My background's a little different. I work directly with the industry and landowners in the state. Folks who are using wood as a product, and we're looking at more efficient ways to utilize that product to meet society's needs, yet maintain sustainable forestry. So I'm going to talk today, I'm going to actually present three ideas or three topics. The first is looking at availability. There's a lot of confusion and complaints about the availability of certified or sustainable products. I'm going to talk a little bit about why that availability is what it is, a little bit about the supply and demand. We heard already John mention that the demand for certified products is really not as high as what it was predicted to be. And then finally, I'd like to kind of end with a little bit of discussion of what the industry's perspective is on certification and sustainability. Whenever you're having the discussion about sustainability and certification, it's important to know what everyone's views are. And I think we understand the environmental views quite often, but not necessarily the economic and social views. So I'm going to present a little bit of information on what the industry thinks of certification process and why they've been a little hesitant to jump on board at this time. So I've already kind of given the first couple of introductory slides there about my presentation. So we'll get right into sustainability. What is it? And John already mentioned it's kind of a confusing term. In the eye, it really depends on the eye of the beholder. And that depends sometimes whether you're in the manufacturing, government, whether you're just a common citizen or an activist. And part of the problem with the eye of the beholder concept of sustainability is it becomes confusing. You know, think about those of you who are doing green building now. How much time have you put into educating yourself about green building and certification and sustainability? I would argue a fair amount of time. You've done that on your own, but think about the average consumer. How much time do they spend on trying to understand what sustainability is? And when they walk into a Home Depot or a home center, what does sustainability mean to them, and how are they supposed to identify it if they've put a minimal amount of time into trying to identify what these things mean? And think about from the industry perspective, when you have all these different certifying organizations and ideas of sustainability, which one are you supposed to choose? And what if you get on the wrong bandwagon and everyone else goes in a different direction? And so you're going to be hesitant to do so. And I would argue that certification is kind of makes it easier for folks if you think about the average market person. The average market person not spending a lot of time looking at what sustainability means, they can easily walk in somewhere and say, hey, it's certified. Some third-party organization says that this material is sustainable. Therefore, I believe it, right? They're less willing to believe a government agency or an industry agency, but if some third party says, hey, it's okay, then I believe it's so. And so certification kind of makes it mindless for the average consumer to make a decision whether something is sustainable or not. It's also quantifiable, right? You can go in and quantify based on what the criteria is, whether something is sustainable based on these organizations. They actually have criteria for their audits. And so there's a way that it makes it easy to quantify. Whenever you can quantify something, it makes it easier for the general public to understand. But one of the things John mentioned, whether you're thinking sustainable products or certified products or some combination thereof, markets are actually a key to sustainability. You've got to be able to meet the needs of society and consumers. If we look at availability, you know, what is out there as far as supply, you could argue, based on your perspective, that we have a huge supply of sustainable material in forest products out here in Virginia today. But again, that depends on your concept and idea of what sustainability is. I would argue that 99% of the folks harvesting and processing forest products in the state of Virginia would make the argument that they are sustainable. They would not be in business today if they were not sustainable. They would argue that they are not the forest industry of the early 1900s. They are foresters and forest industries of today, meeting today's environmental regulations and best management practices. Now that's one concept, that's one perception. You could also argue differently, right? You could have a different perception. You could say that sustainability has a different mindset. It may be a group trying to focus on locally harvested wood, trying to reduce their carbon footprint, using particular methods of harvesting and processing, keeping that wood local to be more sustainable and less of a carbon footprint. And a classic example would be the Appalachian Sustainable Development. You know, they're not a certified wood product, but again, they have a different concept of sustainability. And depending on your thoughts, that may meet your needs. So there is a lot of material out there, but whether or not it meets your definition of sustainability is the question. And then we jump into certified wood products. There's still limited availability of a certified wood product, depending on what certification agency you're interested in, because of demand. You know, the producers are going to meet with the market demands. And quite frankly, the demand hasn't been there up to this point. How do you find these materials? If you're interested, you can go to the Forest Certification Resource Center and find select specific products and find where those products can be manufactured and purchased from, regardless of a particular certification agency. Or you can go to the actual certification agency. Each one of them has a database of products and manufacturers that are under their certification scheme. One of the problems, if you go to these websites and look at these databases, is that a lot of local manufacturers or providers of these materials that are listed on these databases may actually be supplying both certified and non-certified materials in their regions. Classic example is if you go to look at Virginia under lumber manufacturers or lumber suppliers, you'll find a lot of suppliers listed as being certified under FSC. But what you find is the products that they actually offer that are certified are actually imported tropical products. And if you're looking for local products such as local hardwoods like red oak and yellow poplar, they're actually providing a non-certified product. So it's actually a little difficult to find sometimes exactly what you're looking for. And Charlie's going to talk in a minute about how much certified forest land we have in Virginia, but there's a fair amount of certified forest land in the United States. And you might ask yourself, why is there such an offset between the amount of certified forest land material and the amount of certified products that we have available to us? Part of the problem, as we've mentioned, is that supply and demand. There may be a lot of supply, but there must be a demand from the consumer side for folks to produce those certified products rather than non-certified products. And if you ask yourself, where is this demand? Well, you have to look at consumers. Are consumers really interested in a certified product? And when we talk about that, we're not talking about small percentages. There's definitely a small percentage out there that's very conscious of the environmental impact and the footprint they have. But you've got to think of your average consumer. You know, who's driving the larger percentage of the market there? And are they willing to purchase certified products? And I'm going to get into more detail about that. But just take, for example, Home Depot. How many of you remember in the late 1990s, early 2000s, what Home Depot said they were going to do with all their wood products? What were they going to do? Every single product that was going to come through the door was going to be from sustainable sources. And how are they doing? What do you hear about that today? They came out with big press announcements, and it was all over the news. Lowe's was going to follow suit. How did they do? Does anybody even know? Does anybody even hear? Right? They didn't follow through with that. Now, they still are trying. If you go to their website, you can find information where they're looking for certified materials or what they call sustainable materials. So they are trying. Yes, sir? Why?
Why they weren't successful?
Well, there's a couple of reasons why, and we're going to get into that as we go through a little bit farther. One of the other problems is consumers demanding. Why one of the reasons that consumers don't demand for certified wood products is they're not willing to pay for certified wood products. And we'll get into who pays for the certification process, or what we call chain of custody. Because a mill that wants to produce certified wood products, you would think, can just go to a certified forest, get that material and make a product, but that's not the case. That mill has to be certified in the chain of custody. So they also have to undergo audits. They also have to pay for the certification process. And in order for that to work in our current market structure, they have to be able to pass those costs on to the consumer, and the consumer has to be willing to pay for those costs. So any producer that wants to market, sell certified wood product, and they're going to do some type of manufacturing to that product, for instance, take certified trees, make certified lumber, take that lumber and then make flooring. Each step in that supply chain has to be certified in the chain of custody. And that adds expense and complication, because also that manufacturing certified wood flooring, it's only a small percentage of their market. So they have to track all the material going through their processes that's certified. Yet they're also running non-certified wood material through there as well, because that's the majority of their market. And so now they've actually got an added layer of bureaucracy. And that chain of custody, does that require them to manufacture things in a different way? Do we have new processes? Are we doing things different in the manufacturing facility? The answer is no. It's the same thing. But we're tracking that material to prove that it's come from a sustainable source. Okay? Now, to get back to the Home Depot question, this is not just picking on Home Depot, but this is looking at a survey of all home supply centers. What do they think is important when they look at selecting a product? And keep in mind, you can say, well, they're the bad guys. They're obviously making these decisions. But what decisions they're making, what are they based on? They're based on meeting the needs of their customers. They're not going to do something that their customers don't desire. And if you look at the top items on there, what they look for in products, what are they? In relation to forest certification or certified products, how does it break down? What are they looking at? What are consumers interested in? We're interested in price. We're interested in quality. We're interested in availability. If I go to a store, is it going to be on the shelf? Where is certification? It's the very last item on there. All right?
And of those large home sales centers that are out there, if you look at why they look at certification, what is their driving forces? Well, it's kind of interesting. One of the main reasons they select a certified wood product is because it's the only product available in that category, not because it's their first choice, right? Also, the second largest reason they do it is to improve the company's image, which is a driving factor from consumers, if you think about it, okay? And they'll readily admit they would love to carry more certified products, but there has to be a demand for those products because there's a little bit of a premium placed on those products, and the customer has to be willing to pay for it. So in general, what we also find in regards to certified wood products is that consumers don't consider a North American product as needing certification. Most consumers out there say, if I'm going to buy a tropical species from somewhere in South America or Africa, it needs to be certified because they are aware of deforestation in the tropical countries. And if you look at the survey results, they're saying, hey, you know, we're very interested in purchasing certified products if we believe it comes from the tropics. But we don't need to do that for North American products. And so we need some education there in order for that to change. And since most of you are interested in green building and building homes, if we look at results from the National Association of Home Builders consumer preference survey that they conducted, if you look at folks being concerned about the environment when they build a home, the numbers are actually pretty high. Only about 12% said we're not concerned about our impact on the environment.
I think they've got new numbers out.
They do have some new numbers out, and they're from 2005, I think. I was unable to get those for this presentation. But the point is that folks are still interested in working with the environment. They're interested in their impact, but the majority of them are not willing to pay to offset that impact, which is one of the problems you face if you're interested in having certified wood products or sustainable products available. There has to be a consumer demand. And what you see is there is some demand. There is a little demand, and this has grown from this survey to the newer survey. There is a percentage of folks out there willing to pay, but it's still not the driving force of the market. And if you look at other studies that have been done for furniture and flooring and other wood products, you find that most consumers are driven by what you would think, and that is the price margins. The average consumer is going after the price. The average consumer is also more interested in a third-party certification, i.e. certified wood products, rather than the statement of sustainability, because they don't trust an organization that considers itself or calls itself sustainable. They're looking for a third-party organization to make that claim. The largest gain, probably, in certified wood products, or the idea of using sustainable wood products, is coming from the green building industry. I would say the biggest impact that we see is from the green building industry. We're seeing a large upswing of demand for these products recently because of this. But interestingly, even if you look at members of the U.S. Green Building Council, a survey conducted recently said that 30% are not even aware of what certified forest products are, and 63% haven't looked for them in purchases, which I would say in this room, you know, I took the little informal survey at the beginning of the talk, I would say you beat these numbers considerably. So there's definitely, hopefully, a change moving there. But it's a definite indication that we need more what? We need more education about the importance of these products if we're going to see more certified products on the market. Now, just to give you a little bit of idea of the industry perspective, why haven't they all jumped on board with forest certification? I think most industry folks out there today would argue that they are environmentalists. They're out there working every single day with the raw material and the environment. They're the folks that are out there enjoy being out in the woods. They don't want to see their livelihood or those forest lands disappear. They'll argue that they're not the forest industry of the past. They're actually kind of sitting on the fence with green building programs. They're not real happy with some of them because they feel that a lot of the green building programs today don't accurately distinguish between low environmental impact products from high environmental impact products, and encourage the use of some products that actually have a very high overall environmental impact. And what they would like to see overall is an apples-to-apples comparison of products. Use a life cycle analysis to compare products to make sure that you're talking about equal usage or impact overall. They're concerned that wood is the only material in green building programs that has to demonstrate responsible practice and product manufacture? Why aren't the other industries and other raw materials, why don't they have to demonstrate responsible practice in their manufacture? Classic example is if you look at, and I'm not putting one product over the other here, I just want to demonstrate that where they're coming from in drawing perspectives. We want things to be comparable. And if you compare steel studs to wood studs, wood takes a hit in some of these programs because it contains no recycled material. Well, of course a 2x4 doesn't have recycled material in it. It's a fresh, it's a new product. But it can be coming from old generation lands, and it uses about half the energy in its manufacture and about four times less fossil fuel than the steel would use. And so basically they're concerned that things aren't compared on an apple-to-apple basis. When the forest certification programs were first talked about and really came out in their infancy, there was a large market projected for these products. And a lot of industry jumped on board with the idea there would be a large market and premiums available to them. And that just didn't happen. They haven't come forward as they were projected to be, and so a lot of folks felt like they kind of jumped on too early. And so a lot of the industry's been holding back and waiting for that market to come. And you hear a lot about the European market using certified wood materials. If you look at hardwood exporters in the United States, only about 26%, only about a quarter of those folks even get requests for certified material. So you're thinking that our woods going overseas are all certified, only about 25% even get requests for that material. The future. What do we think of the future of certified wood products? I think the demand is growing. I think the green building movement is causing there to be a larger market segment demand for sustainable products. I think also if you look at the high-end markets, if we get away from the average consumer and the average market, there's definitely a niche out there of the high-end consumer that is interested in paying the premiums for these products. I think education is key for the growth for use of these products and understanding why they're important. And I think one of the problems you're going to see about certification is that it's actually easier for large companies to get into the certified market than it is for smaller companies. And there's some good examples out there. Anderson Tully is an excellent example of a hardwood product, and the Collins Companies is an excellent example of both a hardwood and softwood manufacturer getting on board with certification. And the Collins Companies were actually praised by the Wildlife Federation recently for their activities in certifying all their company lands and providing sustainable forest products. With that, I'll conclude.
Thanks a lot, Brian. And finally, to finish off our talk today, we're going to have Virginia perspective from Mr. Charles Becker. Charlie's current position is Utilization and Marketing Manager with Virginia Department of Forestry, with the responsibility of assisting to maintain a prosperous forest industry in Virginia. His main duties include providing forest innovations, resources, markets, and the economic importance of Virginia's forest resources, with an emphasis on improving utilization, increasing value added in secondary processing, and promoting specialty products. He obtained a BS degree in forestry from Virginia Tech and a master's from forestry from the University of Tennessee. He's also worked in wildlife management, forest recreation, forest inventory, and urban forestry industries. Without further ado, Mr. Becker.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon. I'm going to try to do is talk a little bit more about Virginia. A lot of the things that John and Brian talked about, I'm going to repeat, but I'm going to try to put it more on a local perspective, and you're going to see, I think, a reoccurring theme in a lot of the things you've heard today. Okay, we'll talk about Virginia and the forest cover. Virginia's blessed, has over 15.5 million acres of forest land. Just a little under two-thirds of the state are in forest. And as you can see, it's pretty well spread throughout the whole state. Ownership patterns. As mentioned earlier, the majority of the land in Virginia is owned by private forest landowners. Actually, the forest industry that has 10% is actually a lot less than that when this came out. A lot more has been sold to what's called TIMOs and REITs now, probably have about half of that acreage in there. And if you also look on the left, you'll see the breakdown of the ownership patterns. And 300,000 landowners are in Virginia. That have 5 acres or more, and two-thirds of those landowners own less than 100 acres. You can start seeing the problem. We start talking about certifying forest, where some concerns may be starting to show up here. Forest resource assessment. Another thing you have to look at in Virginia, too, in a lot of areas, and with you all being green builders and all, is looking where the populations. If you start looking at that map earlier that showed a tremendous amount of forest land, now you start looking where the populations are. And if you notice, there's not a lot of large areas in Virginia where there aren't a lot of people also involved in there. And this means that wherever we do a forestry in Virginia, more than likely it's going to be where people are close by around. And that impacts a lot of the things that you can do. Acres of forest land. This is kind of a scale of where we are. 2001 is just today it's just a little less than 2001. The 1630 volume, there's a lot of argument whether that's actually true or not. Depending on who you talk to with historians, they feel the Indians had a lot more cleared land doing farming and stuff back then than what this shows. But essentially is what we're trying to show is since 1907, there's been, until the 70s, we were actually increasing in forest land, and then just over the last few years, we're starting to lose forest land. And just about every bit of that forest land is due to development. Timber harvest in Virginia. Over the last 10 years, they're showing that it has been increasing. We harvest roughly 200,000 acres of land a year. And harvest can be anywhere from clear cuts to thinnings. Essentially, it means any place that they've gone in the forest and done some type of forest management operation. So it's roughly about 200,000 acres a year. And as you can see, it runs into about 5,000 harvesting operations a year. And again, if you look at the size, they're fairly small, average 40 acres. Virginia saw timber harvest. I know this is kind of busy, but the green is in pine saw timber, the brown is hardwood. And since 1980, you can see it's been a general trend up. Roughly today, we harvest around 1.5 billion board feet of timber a year. And hardwood has always been the majority of that. But now look at the forest volume trends over the years. Even in the latest one that came out in 06 or 07, which I couldn't get the numbers for this, the volumes are still increasing. So even though we're increasing our harvest and have tremendous amount of harvest going on, and even though we're losing a few acres, the amount of forest land or volume of forest out there is increasing all the time. This is one of the things that we're saying as a statewide level, we must be sustainable. Even though we're harvesting and harvesting, we're showing increased volumes of wood out there at all times. And one of the base things of sustainability is that you aren't harvesting more than you're growing. Well, this is a thing here that shows since 1940, we've continued to increase the amount of forest that we're growing out there, or at least the volumes of it. Another concern we have, as you saw from that map earlier when I was showing the population distribution, Virginia is made up of a lot of small private forest landowners. Here's a tract of land. This is in Louisa County, which is a fairly rural county. This is 7,500 acres of land, all forested. However, this is the ownership of that plot. And all of a sudden, we have 328 ownership parcels, 22-acre average. Largest is 518. We can discount all of the little lots that are probably just going to be housing lots. But could you imagine trying to do a certification and an audit of just this one tract of land? And these are some of the concerns that we run with in Virginia. Okay, Virginia Private Land, Sustainable Forestry Programs. The American Tree Farm System has the largest participation in the state, over 756,000 acres, with 1,556 landowners. Now remember, we had 300,000 landowners in Virginia, and this is the largest program. Sustainable Forestry Initiative is over 600,000 acres, and essentially, it's only six forest landowners. These are TIMOs, REITs, and forest industry are the six that are in there. No, what we would call, none that we would consider our traditional mom-and-pop private forest landowners. We have one Forest Stewardship Council, one group certifier, that covers just 7,000 acres. That is all your FSC land in Virginia. Actually, I understand there are some other lands that do have joint certifications, but I pulled this number off the FSC site yesterday. So they're saying in Virginia, that's all the lands that you have that's available for FSC certified forest products in Virginia. Miscellaneous, they're self-certifying. Appalachian Sustainable Development was mentioned earlier. They're a self-certifier. You have some easement programs. Nature Conservancy is working with landowners in certain areas. And several other ones out there have what's called self-certifying. They're saying, we do sustainable forestry. We have these criteria. Take our word for it. We're good people. We're following it. So we're local. You can check what we're doing. So they self-certify. One of the reasons they self-certify is what was mentioned earlier, is the cost of being certified by one of the other large groups. So why so little certified forest land in Virginia? Well, over 80% of the forest landowners aren't involved in any program at all. I mean, and we have just even doing forest management plans or things like that. It's a small percentage. Many are unaware of forest certification. Even with all the talk and things and talk about certified products and certified forests, most of the people who own forest land around here don't even know what forest certification is. Until very recently, except for the tree farm system, the programs weren't designed for private landowners. They were for big government. They were for industry. They were for large land holdings. This has changed now, and you see more and more of them trying to focus on the small landowners. But really, in Virginia, they weren't even a player in the system until just the last year or two, which frustrated, I'll say, a lot of our forest landowners. Many see no reason to be certified. This was brought up earlier. What do they get out of it? You know, if I certify, what's it to me? I mean, why should I entail those additional costs? Which leads to the costs are believed to be greater than any of the benefits. And benefits for a lot of our landowners don't necessarily mean economic. Benefits to them can mean a lot of different things. It could be, you know, recreation. It could be clean water. It could be spiritual. But how is certification going to help them increase any of those benefits to make up for the cost? Ownership patterns. As I showed you earlier, we have a lot of different ownerships with a lot of different ideas. Another concern is the majority of the landowners now are 55 to 60 years old and older. So what's going to happen to that land? I think I don't have the exact numbers in me, but except for the family farms and family woodlands that have been in for generations, a lot of land changes hands every 5 or 10 years. So how does long-term certification programs fit? You know, every time they sell the land, does that mean the new person has to go through the whole certification process again? What are the costs and all of doing those type of things? Again, another question, who is defining sustainability? Questions all the time. Anybody can have a different idea of what sustainability is. And how is it being defined? Again, we're talking about small tracts of land a lot of times. The average tract, like I said, is probably under 40 acres. If you have 100 acres of land and you do a harvest or so, what is sustainable? If you clear cut that and say, well, it's not sustainable because there's nothing left. Well, if you let it grow back and plant it, like some mentioned, say it would be. If you look at 50 to 100 year time span, it is. The trees grow back. You know, it is sustainable in there. So you have a size problem, a time problem, and things like this of what sustainability is. And this is a real concern with small landowners. You also have to remember, if you're a small landowner, you may only have one harvest in your lifetime. And if you have small land and one harvest in your lifetime, how long do you pay for certification before you get that benefit back? And will it pay all the certification costs? The other questions come up, and Brian mentioned this too, is who would buy the timber? We don't have a single logger in Virginia that I think is chain of custody certified, except with ASD, some of the very small ones. We don't have a single sawmill that has chain of custody. You know, in additional processing, there's all these costs to go along. Again, most of our sawmills are mom and pops. We probably have, you know, between 150, 200 sawmills in Virginia. Then you have, if they don't do the drying themselves, they have to send it a place else to get it dried. Well, does the dryer, then he has chain of custody. You go for the processing. So all these different steps with chain of custody, you have people that have to do paperwork. And for products that nobody are asking for yet. And somebody has to pay the cost. So if you say, okay, we're going to give the landowner 10% more for doing all the work and his, then you give the loggers an extra 10% because of the care and different things and maybe having to do things different. Then you add to the sawmill and you keep adding up, and all of a sudden by the time you get out here, are you all willing to pay 40 or 50% more for the same product to have that certification from a small landowner? And these are the concerns that we are running into. What can be done? First off, develop a program that involves the people who actually own the forest land. These programs were developed, originally FSC and stuff was developed for the rainforest, tropical lands, and then it was moved over here. Then it was done for large things. Nobody ever came to our landowners and said what we can do. The tree farm system is the only one that's actually tried to involve local people and try to get them doing. Now, they are working now through the certification process and hope to be certified by PEFC sometime this year. What are the real tangible benefits can private forest landowners expect? Many already feel they are practicing sustainable forestry, which was brought up before. If I've had this land in my family for several generations growing timber, and we still have that providing wildlife, recreation, and all that, looks sustainable to me. The numbers we have for Virginia are showing sustainability. Forest sustainability includes maintaining working forests. The biggest concern we have right now in Virginia with the Department of Forestry is conserving forest land base. When costs outweigh benefits for owning land, land has changed to something else. So one of the things we're real concerned about in Virginia, well, me probably more personally than some of the other ones because I'm involved in it, is be sure when you set up a program that's out there to have sustainable forests, doesn't have unintended negative reason for owning forest land. If all of a sudden the only way that a person with a forest land can be in the game is to be certified or nobody will buy their products, yet they can't afford to do that because nobody will pay them to do that, what is the alternative for a lot of people? And a couple of questions to think about. This comes up with the landowners and our local folks too. Why, if FSC wood or bamboo shipped from another country considered more green than wood that is grown, harvested, and processed locally? And the other question is how will the increased push for LEED certification and FSC wood impact the forest landowners and forest industry of Virginia? These are just some things to think about as we move forward. Is that considered sustainable forestry? And that's all I have. Thank you. Yes.
If the state wishes to promote sustainability, could their programs not be done like the CREP programs and through the districts to give incentives for a certain amount of acreage for people to create sustainable forests? I mean,
where's the money going to come from to do that?
But the programs like the state has now, I mean, you know, with...
Have you seen the state budgets?
Well, I know. I'm never saying that's the only way that it could happen.
Well, no. The other thing is if you as builders and people out here are demanding these products, And I'm going to throw it back on you. If you think you need these products and have these products, what things are you doing to help the landowners or help the loggers or help the ones to provide you those products? Have there been any things from the top, we'll go top down, of programs up here to help people meet the needs that you say that you need?
Well, that's exactly what I was saying. It seems
like you're talking about government doing it.
But to get it on the market, you're going to have it start somewhere, as they do, you know, with other programs. If you really truly want it, to get those sustainable products in the market, people are standing there waiting for it to be on the shelves. If it's not on the shelves, it's because it's not an incentive.
People aren't waiting for it to be on the shelves. We just showed all of that.
But, well.
Have other states experimented with providing funding or even mandates?
There are several states. Now, Virginia, which I don't know if I showed it on there, that we have another problem in Virginia is that, yeah, there's states like Wisconsin, Michigan, there's some of them that got into it, and they certified their state lands, Pennsylvania. But they get grants from somebody to pay for that certification in a lot of those areas. They also have very large volumes of state forest lands in there. Virginia, we have maybe 60 to 70,000 acres of state lands that we go through there. Now, and a lot of the other ones have, you know, half a million to millions of acres, so it was a nice start. Also, by doing that, too, is most landowners have come up and said, well, the lands of Wisconsin or Pennsylvania are certified. What they don't know is it's just the government lands are certified, but because they did that, most people think all the lands in the state are certified. But in most cases, they were paid for by grants or some other program. We have looked at it in Virginia. We thought about doing it several years ago, but the costs were just unbelievable, and we just couldn't justify the cost that was going to do to do the audits. We had, and we're ones that have all of our programs in GIS, all of our management plans. We can show 50, 60 years of sustainable forestry and actually increasing and stuff like that. But the cost for the audits and the cost for getting registered were just not something that we could absorb as a state agency.
Well, we've got about 10 minutes or so for questions.
We got doctors back here.
Over. So if anybody needs to leave in the midst of our questions, feel free to do so. We'll be being rude by any means. And let's open the questions up to all three of our presenters.
I'd also like to answer your question. Of the mills that I've worked with that are certified in the state, classic examples in Pennsylvania, they have all their lands certified. But they bring in both Gatewood that's non-certified and their own lands that are certified. And they find that it's hurting them now with all their lands certified because they have these premiums that the market's not demanding. So they actually sell certified lumber to customers who aren't asking for it just to get it to move. Because there is not enough demand for those hardwood products that are certified off their own land.
All right, so you go out onto this land to certify it. What are you looking for? I mean, what is it? Is it water runoff? Is it understories coming back? Or what does it mean to certify a particular piece of land as certified at all, much less this whole dubious sort of by beholder, what is sustainability? What is it that they're looking for when they certify a piece of land?
Depends which organization. And so I guess John's probably best to speak to FSC.
Well, the management plan is critical, so some documentation outlining what should transpire over time. So you can see specifically the numbers related to volume, species types, what's going to be removed, and then the descriptions related to the best management practices that are going to be implemented to protect wildlife habitat, water quality, prevent soil erosion, all of these different types of technical aspects related to forestry. Those things typically are not outlined for any harvests on private lands primarily. I mean, I'd say on the state lands they have their management plans in place, and a lot of the industrial lands have those things, but you don't see that on the private lands very much. But that's very critical, I think, early on in the certification process that be developed, and that's actually one of the costs that people have to absorb up front that is a turnoff, because it does require the consultation of a forester to come in and work with the landowner to assess their objectives, assess the capacity of the forest to meet those objectives, and marry those two together, put together a management plan, and then tie those specific attributes to these other components in the framework depending on which certification system you're pursuing.
So you'd go and you'd look at the management plan.
Management plan
review
has to
be in place, sure. And then you go out and sort of walk the site a little bit and say, okay, yeah, I see that there's these sort of species and these sort of wildlife.
Right, and auditing what was supposed to happen. Did it happen? How did it happen? Let's go out and take some samples and make some observations and do these things married with what was outlined in the management plan that facilitated certification in the first place. Yes, they did. Okay. The products that came out of here can be certified. Or no, they didn't. Maybe we'll revoke your certification.
And what's the annual cost?
Well, it depends. FSC is annual. PEFC, the Pan-European Forest Councils, every 5 years.
I'm curious how much the additional costs are due to the change in the practice versus the bureaucracy of the certification.
I would argue that a lot of the industrial lands, it's pure bureaucracy. Because they have a management plan. And what business wouldn't have a business plan, right? So they have a management plan, and they typically follow BMPs as part of that management plan. Classic example is Westvaco in Covington. They require that all their loggers be certified in the Sharp Logger program and follow BMPs. That stands for best management practices. That's some of your water quality issues at the harvest, etc. And the argument is, well, we're doing these things. Why do we need to pay you this amount so you can see that we're doing these things that we say we're doing? And so you can see that there's two sides to every argument, and that's kind of where a lot of the larger industrial landowners are coming from. We're doing these things.
And they have the scale, too. The economy scales in place because they own large acreages. Right. So it's easy for them, I think, to institute sustainable forestry, and it's more tied to bureaucracy, like Brian was mentioning. Smaller woodlot owners face significant hurdles with trying to implement sustainable forestry on a 40-acre basis. You know, thinking about Charlie mentioned one cut in your lifetime, or perhaps that was Brian. You know, thinking about how the amount of revenue that you could generate at that one point in time relative to what you're going to reap over many, many years. Sometimes it's very difficult for owners to see that, so they do have to absorb losses, and it's tough for them to swallow at that scale early on.
Keep in mind, Virginia, 70-plus percentage of what's out there, forest land-wise, is the non-industrial private landowner. 70%. Question in the back.
And so it sounds like the small landowners, perhaps the certification wouldn't be appropriate, but I wanted to ask, how does the state define forest land? Can you give us a definition? How many trees per acre? What diameter size trees?
It's based on, there's actually two definitions. There's forest land, and then there's timberland. Forest land, essentially, if it has, I think, more than 50 trees per acre, regardless of size, it's forest land. Timberland has to do more with the what can grow, and that, based on the Forest Service, I believe, is more than 20 cubic feet per acre per year, and it has to grow. So if it's a shale barren or something that just grows scraggly things, it's not considered timberland. In Virginia, probably 95% of the land is considered timberland. There's very few amount of land that isn't. Some of the other land that comes out of that is what's called reserve, stuff like national parks and other lands that will never be available for timber harvest by statute.
I have another question too. You're talking about this lack of demand. Isn't it true that SFI, which received a lot of criticism early on for lacking a third-party system like the FSC program, has now committed to a third-party system because of demand? Isn't Appalachian Sustainable Development, which was certainly self-certified, aren't they also working on FSC certification because of demand?
They are working on it. They haven't gotten there yet. They are starting to work on it. SFI went to third-party because that was the main complaint. Tree Farm is going to third party. They're all going to that because that is now the standard now, is third party.
Now, isn't that standard also called demand? Isn't the public asking them to step up to the plate, write their management plans, and then live up to it?
Well, I think a lot of them said they were living up to it already. What they're doing now is, like you said, they want somebody to go out there and do it. You could say that's a demand, or what they're doing is trying to look at where the future is, and they're preparing themselves for the future. Also, if that is the main
criticism of a program you have, if you once you do that and take that criticism away, why does everybody say FSC is the only thing available? It's the only third-party certified one. Well, if all these other ones are starting being third-party certified, then why is FSC still the only one that can be used for all these different things? Third-party certification is third-party certification.
Isn't that a debate within the U.S. Government Council currently about accepting SFI pending their adoption of a third-party rating system?
It's definitely a debate among forest industries and folks like us. I'm not sure. Yes. I know the discussion is there, but the last I heard it was not being changed, but I don't know.
I think we're waiting for the implementation.
I think that we're in the process of comment period on SFI standard for 2010 to 2012. And there's been significant dialogue to that effect related to green building and the role that SFI can play. I tend to think a lot of it came out of the dialogue of key players and the concerns of folks that are already heavily invested in this and looking across these certification standards saying, well, they're third-party audited, and it's third-party certified. So that's an issue. Maybe we should move in that direction because they're getting a lot of positive press and those types of things, as opposed to, say, a swell of demand that now is leading to that from, say, the grassroots, but more along the lines of discussion at higher echelons.
Yeah, I would say be careful how you use the term demand. Because consumers that are looking at certified products, obviously there is a definite preference for a third party. They'll come, if you look at the surveys or research that's been done, they typically, your average consumer does not believe a self-certified product or label as much as they believe a third party. Does that mean the consumer demand is increasing, or if they're looking at any certified, they demand a third party? Those are two different things. So are you just taking that same pie and slicing it up into more percentages, or are you actually increasing the size of the pie? And I would argue that in order for certification to work, we've got to increase the size of that pie. You've got to have more, quote, consumer demand for overall products, not just taking that pie and saying, well, now we need more people in third-party certification. We'll split up what we already have amongst these groups.
Is there any discussion with any of the certifying groups on sort of recognizing this problem and coming up with some sort of an effective but streamlined process for smaller timber owners where they're not having to face a big certification cost just to get in the door with it?
There is. There's group certification is what they're working on. And actually the one that FSC program Virginia down in Southwest, there's a co-op down there. And they are going group certification. Essentially what it is, they get a forest consultant, and essentially he gets certified, and therefore all the lands under his management fall under that. There are still annual fees. They still have to do a pretty lengthy, expensive forest management plan. And what they're finding down there is a very specific type of landowner that they're finding that would get into the system. It's, again, it's people who have land generation after generation, and they are looking at long-term. They have special, it's a very special small group. As you can see, he had 7,000 acres. So he is expanding. So they are looking at that. The tree farm system is ideal once they get their third-party certification. They've been in there since the 40s. They are already set up. So there are some things looking at that. Until, like I said, this last year or so, the fight was FSC, SFI. In Virginia, for the landowner, they couldn't care less about either one of them because neither one of those programs were available to help the majority of the landowners in Virginia.
Let's see about two more questions and we'll wrap up.
In the back.
I thought that standard best management practices were quite different from FSC practices. And your example of having a lifetime, that seemed like a best management practice, where I thought that FSC guidelines were more like you had ongoing smaller cuts versus one big cut. Aren't they quite different, or how does that work?
Perhaps referring to even age versus uneven age management. And the uneven age system is where you go in and remove single trees. Say every 5 years or so, and you can do group selection too, which is maybe like a half acre or so of all the trees, versus even age where you look at like 15-year rotations to go in and thin, and then clear and then regenerate. They support both. again, I think what it boils down to is achieving the objectives as outlined in their principles and criteria. And that is a more expansive set of best management practices than you might have traditionally seen. So they've opened up the spectrum a little bit and begin to include some of those things I talked about, the social and environmental concerns, more so than some of the traditional BMPs did. And they've got a spiritual aspect as well. So there's all these different things at play, but they support both types of forestry. They just want to see that people are actually implementing those practices appropriately and that they are protecting and achieving all the objectives that they have.
One other thing is when we talk about small, even though you do, to have a harvest sale, you have to have a certain economies of scale to be able to afford to go in there and harvest the materials to pay for the actual harvesting and have land over. So in a lot of cases, even with 30 or 40 acres, if you went in there every 5 years, there wouldn't be enough timber to take out to make it economical a lot of times. So they may be able to have to wait every 15 to 20 years, 20 to 30, and depending on how you own the land and when you get it. So again, large tracts of land, you could do a lot more of this. When you get to the small tracts, you lose a lot of the flexibility.
And that's where the cooperative comes into play, because that by pooling acreage across ownerships, they've expanded their economy of scale. So they're going with group certification, and they're working across those smaller tracts. They do have over 7,000 acres, but there are owners that have 30 and 40 acres that participate in the cooperative. And so the idea then is that overarching economy of scale is achieved, and that these practices can be implemented in these smaller parcels.
So is that what you would recommend as a model for Virginia? Or, I mean, it almost sounds like you think we should just abandon the whole certification process and just keep doing what we're doing. Which one would you advocate?
Neither?
Neither?
The group certifications are getting closer. I think in some areas, I think in a lot of cases, the states, again, whether they would consider them independent third parties, I think a lot of cases, the state forestry agencies could come into that. We do a lot of monitoring. We monitor like our state, we monitor all the logging jobs. We go and help with the management plans. We go and do a number of things. And a number of states, I think it could help the small landowners if we could find some ways to where the state forest, now I talk for myself and not our agency now, but from what we've seen, because we've even kind of looked at maybe probably isn't that self-certifying and whether a state agency would be considered a credible third party. But we are doing a lot of the work already. We're keeping a lot of the records already. A lot of the stuff would be easy and it wouldn't be to an extreme cost to the landowner. And it would meet some of the objectives, some talk about, you know, with government coming in and maybe helping subsidize. But I think the first thing you need to do with any type of program is you need to involve the people that are actually producing the raw material. And unfortunately, we are just getting to the point where we're actually
let's have another round of applause for our guests. Once again, thank you guys for coming out.
Sure.